certain circumstances, you do not want to be talking for more than 30 seconds. Pleasantries, and then you're out.
Absolutely. Okay.
But speaking of pleasantries, should we do an interview?
Okay, let's. And welcome to episode... See how smooth I am there? Welcome to episode 4, yeah. Welcome to episode 4 of The Insider from Vanishing Ink. That was a lie. This is episode 5. Now, carry on. And on the line today, I am lucky enough to have Ben Seidman. Ben, how are you today?
Hello, everyone. Hello, Damien. I'm wonderful. Thanks for asking.
Where are you?
I'm currently... I was on a private island in Miami a couple days ago, and then Las Vegas at the Palazzo doing a show with Derek Hughes. And now I'm in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Population, I think it's 3 now that I'm here. So, you know, things change quickly, guys. Don't get cocky.
Okay, we're going to kick off with this. Because some people, we have listeners all around the world, and you are more well-known in the States than you are here. So, with no disrespect intended, who are you and what do you do?
Oh, no, not at all. I'm very, very famous in the States. But let's perpetuate that rumor right
now. The very
right
famous Ben Seidman. Who are you? What do? You have 43 seconds.
Okay, I first of all, I'll use the first half of that to clarify that no one knows who I am, and then I'll use the second half to say I do magic tricks, primarily on stage. I do stand-up comedy and magic together, and that's most of my work, but my background is doing close-up magic, which I still do occasionally and still love.
So, there is something else that you might become more known for, which is the new show on Netflix, so tell us about that.
Yeah, that's a fun thing. I'm very honored to appear on a Netflix original that just dropped about a week ago called Brainchild. And the show is a science show for kids produced by Pharrell and also Atomic Entertainment, who are the guys who did Brain Games that Apollo Robbins and other great magicians also appeared on. So they teamed up with Pharrell, designed this concept, and it's a kids show version of Brain Games in a way where they want to teach kids about science, which I think especially right now, I don't know how things are over in the UK, but especially right now in the United States, I think teaching young people about science is more important than it ever has been. Absolutely. There's a lot of people who are denying science in general, so getting kids into it is great. And I did segments doing magic on that show, and I think they translated it into all of the languages. So wherever you are listening from, if you have Netflix, go on there. And you might, you know, if you're in Korea, there might be a Korean person who has overdubbed my voice. And I think wherever you are, if you get Netflix, you can search for Brainchild and see my segments. The ones that I'm most proud of are on the episodes Space and Social Media. So it's episode 1 and episode 5. And they're pieces that I designed specifically for the show, for the theme. And I'm really, really proud of that material.
I've just seen them, and I've just watched them, and I am... You see, this is an interesting thing. Whenever anything's on television, YouTube comments always default to, although they may not know the particular vernacular, they will say pre-show, or setup, or Stooges. And sure. I watched the first one, and I was like, okay, there's something that's crazy. And the second one is a beautiful, elegant sleight of hand. So do you want to talk about either of them, or...?
Sure. Yeah, this is the first interview that I'm actually talking about
Exclusive.
Them in since it came out. So yeah, I'm incredibly happy with how they turned out. Obviously, you know, hindsight, you always want to change things, but there's two interesting things here I think that are worth mentioning. Number one is the social media piece was I'm concerned. I have one big concern with it, and that's that people are just going to go with, oh, they're Stooges, because it really looks clean. It really looks good. But I'm incredibly proud of the method that I developed. They are not Stooges at all. I promise from the bottom of my heart, they are completely, completely fooled. I didn't have them write down information before the show or anything like that. This really hit them like a ton of bricks. And even though it looks completely impossible, it's a method that I had developed several years ago and then continued to tweak and finally solved all the problems in time to make it work for this show. So that is my promise. People will say, oh, it's completely set up. It is. I promise you from the bottom of my heart, they are genuinely fooled. It is really, really impactful for the spectator's life.
Let's pause. because we don't want any spoilers, anybody that hasn't seen it, go and watch it now. So it was episode 1 and episode 5, right?
Yes, episode 1 and episode 5.
We'll give you a couple of minutes, and then you can come back, and then we can talk about it. So the effect is you take a picture.
So this is now the spoiler alert. We're assuming that people have paused the interview, and they've searched Brainchild on Netflix, and they've watched my segments, which are about halfway through each episode, Space and Social Media, episodes 1 and 5, and now we're back, and we're talking about it.
So the effect is somebody, you have a camera and you take a photograph of you with a couple, and the first phase is the photograph is placed on top of the lady's iPhone case and it melts through the iPhone case so it's underneath it.
Yes.
But that's not the good bit. I mean, it's great, but explain the good bit.
Well, sure. You've now hopefully watched them. If not, then
it's their fault, man. It's their fault.
It's totally that. We gave them two chances.
Yeah.
If you haven't done it, unless you don't have Netflix, then, you know, I know that's expensive for a magician.
It is. They're not going to see it anyway, so we can just talk about it. It's fine.
And then the last phase is because the whole theme of the episode is social media, and so they log on to their own. I give them a choice of whatever social media account they want. They open one of them up, and then the photo that I just took moments ago is now their background photo on their own account.
So when's the app being released?
That is not being released.
you'd sell a lot of them.
Man, I know. It's interesting. The last thing I put out was in, I think, 2010, and I haven't released anything since then. Intentionally, I really wanted to focus on just performing for people, and I think that a unique idea is such a valuable thing. And so when I have an idea like that, I'm very cautious about it, and I'm very guarded. And it's not that I don't want to see other magicians doing something that I created necessarily. It's exactly that. Here's the problem. Magic is such a wonderful thing, but you run into that problem where everything seems very derivative, especially to a lay audience. Like, let's say you come out with an insanely good original version of Triumph, and you perform it, and it's this just beautiful piece that you developed the method on. You know, you do that, and someone else does a cheek-to-cheek deck, most lay people are going to think it's the same trick.
Sure.
So especially a unique premise, not just a method, unique methods are important too, but especially a unique premise is so incredibly rare and valuable that I'm very, you know, when I come up with things like that, I want to do them and I want to put them out into the world. And I hope that when people see me, they go, oh, great, we saw some stuff that we don't necessarily get to see anywhere else. So that's why I'm cautious about it. Although I should say there's an idea that I had years ago that I've been doing, which is incredibly, incredibly strong, which I'm considering. I can't make up my mind, but I'm considering lecturing on it at the session and maybe putting it out.
Because that was good. I was going to beautifully segue into that then, which is, so what you're going to do at the session, the 21 card trick or something, you know?
Sure, yeah, exactly. No, I mean, at the session, I'm doing my full show. I'm doing the show that I do, that I make my living with. So I'm doing that, and then I believe I'm doing also a little lecture as well where I'll talk through a couple of routines and possibly this other one, which is a mentalism piece. It's a close-up mentalism piece that has served me quite well and allows for these wonderful, wonderful moments. So I might put that out at the session. We'll see. But as far as the material on the material on Brainchild, it probably won't be in print anytime soon. There's the cell phone trick, and then there's a coin vanish sequence, which...
It's a hell of a sequence.
Oh, thank you.
But what's interesting, because there's a couple of bits that I didn't... a lot of it fooled me. But what I did figure out, and this was interesting, was that the methods are cancelling each other out.
Yes.
It seemed to be a sequential thing that went through a vanish of how many half dollars was it?
I think it was six silver dollars.
And everyone, it seemed, was a different technique.
Yes, I intentionally designed it so that the methods cancel each other out. And for also the other naysayers, I should mention that although I did this to camera, it was designed for people. In fact, the day before I performed it, the executive producers asked if I could do it straight to the camera instead of for the spectators. And that actually made it far more difficult because now we're doing one continuous camera shot.
And you can't misdirect the camera.
Yes, exactly. So even though that was done to the camera, it's designed for a live environment, and I do perform that live.
It's a beautiful thing. Everybody should go watch it now.
Thank you. And then the last thing to mention with this, and unless you have any other questions, happy to talk about it, but the other thing I'm quite proud of with these two spots is that unlike almost all TV magic shot for shows besides live appearances, these were done in one continuous take without any breaks, without any cuts.
Why do you think the producers made that decision?
Well, actually, it was me who made that decision.
Yeah.
Certainly with the social media piece. The thing with the social media piece in particular was I was worried that if there was any camera cuts, people would think that that's when we did something. They would think that that's when, you know, something sneaky happened. And so I was actually adamant. I think the producers really did want to cut social media and tighten it a little bit, because once I take the photo, it takes a couple, you know, it takes like 30 seconds for that photo to print out of the camera. And so I think they would have been happy to shave it down, but I was incredibly insistent that we keep it all in one continuous shot. So people didn't think that was the method. So, that was a challenge, because obviously when you make cuts, it can be advantageous for a variety of reasons, but, it was very important to me, particularly with social media, to keep it as one continuous shot. And then when they asked to do the space episode, which was the coin sequence, when they asked to do that one, not to the spectators, but directly to camera, I said to myself, okay, well, that's got to be one continuous shot too, because there's no good place to cut. It'll be weird if we cut. I think they punch in once, but it's still from the same cut. So, that was a challenge, but I'm very, very happy that I did it. It was such a cool challenge, and I'm happy. I'm very proud that I did it and know that it can be done.
Well, I think it's astonishing that the talent got to be able to be so forthright in making that request.
Well, in television, I think that can be rare, but if you put your foot down and you believe in yourself and you believe in what you're doing, then I think it can be done. When I did Penn and Teller's show, they asked for me to submit some tricks, and I submitted the piece that I wanted to do. And the producer came back, and they had seen a thing I did on Travel Channel and said, oh, we'd love you to do this other trick. But the truth was, I'd already done that on a show. I'd already done that on a TV show, and so having the footage of that didn't seem valuable to me. So I said, no, I've already done that. This is the piece I would like to do. And I just straight up said, this is the piece I would like to do on Fool Us. And if you don't want that piece, then find someone else for the show.
Right.
And so they said, oh, okay, well, great. We'll do that then. And, you know, I've heard stories of other people who've submitted multiple tricks.
Yeah.
And then the producers choose. And then the magician's really bummed out. They're like, oh, I didn't want to do that one. But, you know, if you're comfortable saying no, and you're comfortable losing the job, then you have so much more power, because you can call the shots. And worst case scenario, they say no, and you say no, and you walk away as friends. They'll find someone else, and maybe you lose that opportunity, but you stick to your guns, and I think the reward is greater than the risk, certainly.
Because in that situation, you would have ended up with two bits of footage of doing the same trick, and is one of them more valuable than the other? Maybe not, you know.
Sure. I think that maybe, and the Travel Channel specials I did weren't seen by that many people. Fool Us is watched by much more. But I wanted, the reason I did the piece on Fool Us is because it really showcases what my live performance looks like.
There's a lot of comedy in it, so if anybody hasn't seen it, spoiler alert, he does go and watch it, but he does Ring Wallet and Watch.
Unless you're going to the session, in which case, wait, you'll see me do it live.
It's very good. But there's an awful lot of comedy in there. Have you worked it out? Is this important to you, the comedy to magic ratio?
It's not It's not like a specific ratio where I'm trying to hit 60 to 40% or anything like that, but it is important to me that people walk away thinking that I was funny and entertaining.
Sure.
It's incredibly important to me, and I think that's why people hire me. Is, you know, a compliment I get from bookers and agents pretty often is, the magic's incredibly great, but we know that you're going to be funny too. And that is a huge thing for me. Yeah.
So,
I mean, enough tooting my own horn. Everything is a work in process. I am not nearly as funny as I would like to be, and my joke writing is not nearly as good as I would like it to be, but I'm on that journey, and I'm trying to get better every day.
So we're there, and we were talking about Ring, Wallet and Watch, which was one of my pre-written and organized questions, which was classic magic versus, I've seen you do both. You do that kind of classic thing, if I think we can call Tommy's stuff classic, and some more modern effects with like transpose with wallets and driver's license and things. So in a fight, who would win, classics or modern, and why?
Well, for me, I am not happy if I'm not doing something that I feel is unique and is going into the world in a different way than it came into the world.
Okay.
So, in other words, Ring, Watch, Wallet is an interesting example because Tommy Wonder is my favorite magician. Certainly magic construction wise. And I've loved that routine for years. Although I think most people, and possibly even Penn & Teller, at first assume that I'm just doing the handling that is put out in the books of wonder. The reason I'm really proud of that routine is because that method is entirely my own.
Ah.
It was designed to look as close as possible.
Yeah, I'm doubly fooled then. I don't like you. We were getting on so well, and I just thought it was Tommy's handling as well.
Thank you.
God damn it.
What this came from is I communicated with Tommy via email when he was still alive, and I asked him about how much it would cost for him to make one of those for me. And I was in college at the time, and the number he quoted was certainly reasonable, but way more than I was able to spend.
Sure.
And so I thought maybe I can come up with something of my own. And then the other thing was I was in college. I wasn't performing in sports jackets all of the time. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes I wouldn't wear a jacket, and I wanted a method that didn't use a holdout.
Sure.
And I wanted a method that was self-contained. And even now that I do wear a sports jacket when I perform consistently, I remove my jacket during the show. And so having a holdout wasn't going to work for me.
Right.
And so I set off in this process of trying to develop a routine that looked as close as possible to his, but, you know, had different advantages, because I can take off my jacket, it's all self-contained, nothing can break, and it's been one of the pieces that I do in almost every, I would say I do it in every single show, because it really fits me. And the stand-up I developed really tells you very quickly who I am and what I'm all about.
So that's what you open with?
It's very close. It's very close to the beginning. It's probably the second thing in the set.
Right.
Although if I'm in a smaller room and I don't have a microphone, then I do open with it.
Interesting. Okay, so yeah, you, for some particular unusual reason, you've got a captive audience on a desert island, Ben. One of those people might be a football with a face drawn on it.
Okay.
You are only allowed 3 tricks. What are they?
Is Tom Hanks in the audience?
No,
is
he no. I wouldn't do that to you.
Oh, well, no, I would be delighted by that. all right, so I'm only allowed to bring 3 tricks with me. I would probably bash my head in with a rock. This sounds awful. not the tricks part, just being on the desert. And here's the thing. If I brought material with me, people would just be like, wait, you had the option to bring 3 things with you and you picked magic tricks?
No, look.
Not
look,
a radio?
No.
Or food?
No, look.
Or a fishing line?
Look, the premise of this is like a 60-year-old, I don't know how old it is, show on Radio 4 called Desert Island Discs, where you're allowed like 10 records, and you then talk to the presenter about why you pick those 10 records and the stories they tell about your life. You're not going to be chastised because you didn't bring a tin opener and a radio transmitter.
Okay.
So let's just put all of that aside. There's no chastity. You are loved, and some people there would love you to show them a trick. You're only allowed to bring three.
Ooh. What's the audience size?
Let's say 75.
Hmm. Great size. Let's see. I mean, that is a tough thing.
Uh-huh.
I would probably bring... I mean, I would want 4 silver dollars mm-hmm. and a deck of cards for my own personal enjoyment and satisfaction of practicing things, because that's pretty universal. You can do a lot of different things with that.
Sure.
But if I was going to do just three tricks, I would probably do the message in a bottle that I'm closing with at Magi Fest,
mm-hmm.
which has been a part of my working repertoire for years now. I would probably... I might do the phone trick that I did on Brainchild,
mm-hmm.
Because that is... I designed that for the show, but I'm just now starting to do versions of that live, which is really, really fun, and it's hitting really hard, so that's exciting me right now. And probably the trick I did on the Travel Channel with the broken bottle,
okay.
which if anyone wants to see, it's if you search for me on YouTube or my website, you can see... that trick and it's a big sequence, but I shatter a broken bottle. I take one of the pieces of broken glass. I vanish that piece into my eye. I then gather up the edges of a handkerchief with all the broken glass in it, and the bottle restores itself, except for one piece that is missing. One piece of glass is missing, which I show my hands empty and then pull out of my eye and show that it matches.
That must be a hit for the kids shows.
Oh, it's perfect for kids shows. Yeah, absolutely. If I can injure just one child, then I feel like I've done my
job. That's what I strive for.
Yeah. That's a whole sequence. So those are probably three things that I would be excited to perform on a desert island.
They're good. I should have set this up actually, because on the radio show on the BBC, they are default allowed the complete works of Shakespeare and a Bible. So to translate to magic, we should, default, you're allowed a deck of cards and 4 silver coins. What else do you have?
Yeah, definitely.
I'll switch that up for the next time. Thank you for letting me test it on you.
Oh, no, that's good. I thought you were going to say, all right, so all you have is the Bible and Shakespeare. I guess Pegasus Page? I don't know.
Is it the gimmicked Shakespeare book test thing that came out?
Seriously. Is it Mother of All, but with Shakespeare? I could deal with that, I guess. I don't know if it's what I'd want to do as the only trick that I have left, though.
Yeah, well, jeez. What can you do? So, comedy, right? That's tough. Is there any way round what you've clearly done, which is just loads and loads and loads of gigs and loads of flight time? What have you learnt that can help people shortcut through some of the, no doubt, pain and misery that you encountered, Ben?
Well, Damien, there's two answers to this. Answer number one is you cannot cut past any of the misery. the real answer is flight time.
Mm.
And people, ask me. I get that question a lot, especially from magicians. No, it's fine. It's a good question, and it makes sense. But there's, the sad answer is really there's no shortcut to being great at that. But I guess the positive answer, if I was to really try to answer that question, I suppose I would say the advice that I have gotten from my stand-up comedian friends that I think is great advice is carry around a notebook or a audio recorder, and when you say something funny and the people who are around you laugh, write it down or record it.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if it's out of context and it's not going to work as a joke, you still do it. Like, one of my very close friends is a comedian named Mike Kaplan, M-Y-Q Kaplan. He was a favorite comedian of mine before we even met and became friends. I love his writing. I think his voice is so sharp and it's so intrinsic to who he is, and he's such a great joke writer. But he always has a recording device in his pocket.
Right.
And whenever we're hanging out, we're making each other laugh, and any moment that he says something that is funny, or even sometimes if something comes up between the two of us, he'll say, hey, do you mind if I record this?
Sure.
And then he'll take out his recorder and he'll write down, he'll make down, he'll record, rather, journal entries of just like, hey, on this day I was here and this funny or interesting thing happened. And then, you know, that's the easy part, is recording all of these things in life. And then the hard part is making yourself go through those recording and then transcribing them and then deciding what could be the seed of a joke and then sorting through those. In the same way that I think I audio record almost every show and listen to almost none of them.
Right.
But if I really was...
But when you're dead, people have this beautiful archive, Ben.
I suppose if they can crack my iPhone passcode.
You just need to have some celebrity nudes on there and someone will crack it then.
I don't know. There's an app called Photo Vault that is also password protected. Don't ask me why I know that. But I think it's good to really have that practice of listening to yourself and trying to find, like, oh, that's a thing I never said before, but that will...
And it got these laughs.
Oh, my God, yeah. Most of the things in my show are things that I just said and someone laughed. Like, here's a perfect example. Someone came to introduce me years ago, came backstage and said, are you ready? And I said, I was born ready. And then they kind of snickered, and I said, wait, that's not true. I wasn't born ready. I was born wet and confused, which is the opposite of ready for most activities. And then I paused, and I said, most activities. And he burst out laughing. And so I walked on stage, and I opened with it.
Hey,
and it worked. Right. And so I went, okay, so that's a thing. And I don't say that in every show, but that's a when the audience is right, that's a thing that sometimes can come out.
Do you think being in LA was... you moved to LA, right?
I did.
How important do you think location is to success?
Well, it depends on what you want, right? If you want to become the best magician in your town and the working performer who's doing most of the shows, then moving to a big city is not necessarily a good idea. But I moved out to Las Vegas as my first step when I was finishing college to be around magic and the magic scene there. And I was always scared of LA. I liked it. I liked going there, but I was scared of, because that's where big show business is. Vegas is show business in a very specific way. But Los Angeles is show business to the rest of the country.
Sure.
And so I waited till I was ready to move to Las Vegas, and waited till I was ready to move to Los Angeles. And I think had I gone out to LA too early, it would have been a mistake.
Okay.
And you know, everyone who wants to move to the big pond, wherever that might be, you have to make up your own decision on when is right for you and where you're going. But I think it's important to try to be around people who are better than you. And if you are the best magician in your town, there's room for growth, but I wanted to be around people who just made me go, oh, why do I even try to do this? This person is so incredible.
Oh, right.
I should quit.
That's what it's meant to be like.
Yeah, I mean, spend an afternoon hanging out with David Williamson and see if you walk away thinking you're still a good magician. But every time I see him... you know, I go through several weeks of depression because I'll never be that good. And then after that, I get better because I spent time with David Williamson.
Absolutely. So you started off doing close-up and then transitioned to, like, platform, comedy, magic. How did that happen?
Yes, I transitioned.
Happen?
I now identify as a stage performer.
How did that happen? Because I imagine there's lots of people out there listening that are close-up kids and close-up performers and want to do more. So how did you do it?
Start doing magic tricks for more people.
Good idea. Thanks.
Yeah, that's as simple as it gets, I think. Just put yourself in that situation. Try to perform. You know, when you're doing close-up, you can do a parlor set for people. And many close-up performers will know the situation where they show up to do a close-up gig and there are these giant round tables that people are sitting at. And you can't really do close-up. The people at the other end of the table cannot really see what you're doing if you're doing on-the-table card or coin work. But if you know, that's the difference between three-fly and coins across in your hands. If you do three-fly, then they can see it. And you can do three-fly for 100 people and make it play. So I think close-up performers who want to transition should start working on material that works close-up, if the majority of your performances are close-up, and start breaking it in front of groups of people there. You know, you can do a close-up gig and grab two or three tables and say, hey, I want to do something for everyone, grab everyone's attention, and then suddenly everyone's watching. Now you're doing a show for the room. So yeah, if you do close-up and you want to transition, just start doing stage shows at your close-up gigs.
Yeah, that's perfect, because I'm talking about doing like Three Fighter, the coins across on the table. Elmsley talked about complaining about his wrists hurting when he first toured America because he was having to do everything and angling the counts so the audience could see it. So it does bring up challenges, but yeah, just do it. Get on with it.
Close-up magic really only works for like four people.
Right.
Like, I firmly believe once you're performing for more than six or seven people, you're kind of doing a parlor set.
Right.
And it's unfortunate because there's so much close-up material that we love dearly. But unless the room is laid out perfectly,
yeah,
you know, is Matrix going to work for more than, more than 10 people?
Yeah.
It's going to be really hard for people to see it.
Of course it is. So how important do you think it is, because you did a theater degree, right?
I did, yeah.
Look at me, researching stuff and everything.
I'm very impressed.
So how important do you think it is to have other people help you with your work in terms of writers or directors or even consultants for magic? I equally did a drama degree, and I think there's so many magicians that could benefit just from learning how to stand on a stage, from learning how to move. So how important do you think it is to have other people to help you?
It's very important. There are certain magicians who get to a point where they just start hiring consultants who write tricks for them, and that doesn't really interest me, because it's the creation of new material and putting it on its feet that really gets me excited. Mm-hmm. And so that's not what I'm talking about. But to have someone who has a good eye watching you and giving you like genuine criticism and advice, that's completely invaluable. And if that person has experience as a performer, and especially if they have experience as a performer in a different discipline,
right,
like as an actor or as someone who can own the stage but doesn't do magic, you will get a completely different perspective. I learned so much from my theater degree about performance, and even just down to taking classes about technical theater and learning about lighting. Mm-hmm. When you show up to know what needs to be tweaked about the lighting at a gig, like that stuff is very helpful. To learn proper microphone technique, mm-hmm, and all of those technical elements you have to learn, and you can learn them by just doing it and failing and learning. But you know, there are hacks to it. I mean, Maximum Entertainment by Ken Weber is a great book for people who want to do more performances. I believe Ken is actually putting out a second version of that, or an updated version, at some point. So that's a great tool if you don't have any theater training. But if you do have access to a director or someone who has that experience,
if you're in a town with an amateur theater company, what do you in America? Community theater, you call it. I can translate. Mm-hmm. To go and like ask those guys, they'd be happy to help.
Oh sure. I mean, community theater. Yeah, you have people who probably love theater and don't do it to make a living, because it's insanely difficult to do that, and most people who try don't. Just like magic, but maybe even more difficult. But yeah, there's probably, if you're in a tiny town, there's probably still someone there who has an experience that is going to help. And the key is to look at that person and what they've done and make your mind up about what advice you should listen to and what you should discount. But give everyone the benefit of the doubt. Any constructive criticism from anyone
is always good.
Is useful. I have a friend called David Girard, based in San Francisco, one of my favorite performers to watch. And he, straight up after his gigs, not a corporate event probably, but he does like a small theater show, and he will walk into the bar where people are hanging out and sort of talk to people. And he will actually ask people direct questions like, did you figure out anything?
Mm.
Do you think you know how that works? Tell me how you think that works.
Wow.
Like, he'll actually, most magicians are terrified to ask. He says, wait, that thing with the book, how do you think it worked? Like, seriously, try to crack it.
Oh, that's interesting. I can't remember who it was. Pat Page or somebody said the best way to get feedback is hiding in the cubicles in the lavatories after a gig and hearing people. That's taking it to the next level.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, getting people's real opinion is incredible. If I had all the resources in the world, I would hire people to go and listen to the audience as they're walking out and make notes.
Mm.
Absolutely. Because most magicians, myself included, can be scared of what people really think and feel.
We're human. Do you know what I mean? We're human, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, but if you can get over that, you get better quicker.
Sure, sure. You're coming to the session in January. You are lucky, obviously, escaping the sunshine of Los Angeles for the grey and drizzle of London. But apart from the $50,000 you're getting, what helped persuade you to come over? What are you looking forward to? Who are you looking forward to seeing?
Is everyone else getting $50,000? Yeah. I feel terrible. They offered me $60,000.
No, it was noted that you took the charity reduction, and we thank you for that.
Sure.
Yeah. That's going to Josh
someone
and Andy's.
Someone has to go to Andy Gladwin's. Yeah, something has to go to Andy Gladwin's shirt budget. By the way, I have there's nothing behind that joke, Andy. I don't even know what type of shirts you wear. You look lovely all of the time. You're fine. I wasn't saying that your shirts are too nice or not nice enough. It could have been anyone.
So what are you looking forward to? Obviously not the weather. Who are you looking forward to seeing?
Well, when Luke Germain lived in Las Vegas, he and I were very, very good friends, and we worked together, and we did a tour together, and he's a buddy who I don't get to see very often. So once he moved back to the UK, we kept in touch, but we only see each other once every handful of years. So I'm really excited to see him, of course. And I don't do many conventions. Here's what happened. Josh and Andy asked me to perform at Magi Fest this year, and I was hesitant because I don't do magic conventions, really.
Right.
But I said yes, and I did it, and it turned out to be such a wonderful, heartwarming experience. It was great. And I realized that the problem was before, I lived in Vegas, I was just surrounded by magic. I was inundated with magic and magicians, and it was just too much.
Mm-hmm.
And by taking a break from conventions and then going back after so long, it really was just great. So after that, they asked me to do the session, and I'm doing a few other things, just because truthfully because I had so much fun at Magi Fest. So I'm just excited to be around the energy of it and to see friends and see what other people are doing. I'm always inspired when I see things that are completely outside of the box. Things that I go like, man, that is something I would have never thought of.
Sure.
Or even, oh man, I wish I'd thought of that.
So can you tell anybody, can you tell us about anything that you'll be doing? I know you hinted at the beginning.
During my show?
Yeah, I mean, not in your bedroom at the hotel, like what you'll be performing.
Oh.
Yeah, does that change the question?
Well, do you think people are going to come or not come to the show based on what I say right now?
Yes, this right now is the only marketing we're doing for the session. It's what somebody that people in England might not have heard of might be performing. Go.
Give me a second to Google who else is coming. Hold on one second. I think Mac's going to be there, right? Isn't Mac King going to be there?
Mac who?
Mac's going to be there, right?
Yeah, the goldfish guy, right?
Yeah, he's, I mean, come for Mac. That's a reason to go, right? Who cares about me?
Cool.
Mac King's coming. Oh, Jared's going to be there? Phenomenal. Yeah, this is going to be great. This is a great lineup. This is a really good lineup.
It bloody is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good. That's really solid. Yeah, this will be fun. I mean, people, hey, if you're coming to the session, you're making a great decision. I hope it's going to be a great lineup. James Went, I just met recently. I thought he was phenomenal.
But he's got very small hands. Yeah.
Does he have small hands?
Little small Welsh
hands.
Well,
you know, you can be, Hey, you can have small hands and be racist and become the president of the free world. So that's, you know, small hands don't mean anything anymore. Did you know that? That President Trump has small hands?
I didn't know he had small hands, like Jeremy Beadle. But no, James Went is astonishing. He's just doing a lecture tour with some masterclasses around the UK. So anybody listening, go to see James Went's website and we'll plug that as well. Because, hey, why not?
Yeah. Hey, James is great. Yeah, I really liked him a lot. And Jared is one of my favorite magicians. I mentioned Williamson earlier. If you ask me my two favorite living magicians, chances are I'm going to say David Williamson and Jared.
Wow. I have never seen Jared's work live. We did the podcast with him last week.
Buddy.
Where he nicely did his professor imitation for me, which I had to edit out. He wouldn't let me put it out. But man, that's good.
Jared is... you know, listen, I do what I do. I'm the clown. I'll make people laugh and do magic and hopefully fool the room. If you really want great magic advice, you should listen to Jared.
There's the advert for the session right there. Thank you so much for your time, Ben. It's been a genuine pleasure. Yeah. I'm very much looking forward to seeing you.
I'm very much looking forward to meeting you as well. And if you, and to the people who are listening, if you come to the session and you want to talk to me, just come over and say hello. Just say hi. That's just walk up, say, hey, I heard the interview. I came to the session.
That is one of the unusual and beautiful things about the session is that people can just go up and talk. But mostly the talent hang out in the bar and in the social areas. The first one I went to, I was working on a coin routine and I had in the bar at about 2 o'clock in the morning, I had Eric Jones. And I'm going to call him Quinoa because I do. Quinoa Harbottle helping me with a coin routine I was working on. I was like, man, it really doesn't get any better than. And I was nobody. They were just helping me. Do you know what I mean? And the session is one of the, a lot of the bigger conventions, the stars will kind of go to their hotel rooms or go someplace else. But at the session, everybody is wanting to help.
That's great. I mean, that's how it should be. If you are a young magician or a magician who doesn't have the notoriety of being a recognizable name in the magic community. If you're anyone besides Danny Doherty is what I'm saying. Feel free to approach anybody and do so kindly and graciously. And if you ask a question, make it a good question because I get messages from young magicians online pretty frequently. And the ones who I help out are the ones who ask good questions.
Right.
The ones who say, hey, what magic, what tricks should I learn?
Mm-hmm.
They don't get help. The people who say, how do I become famous? They don't get my help. The people who have a really good, interesting question that will hopefully lead them to becoming better magicians or performers. Those are the people who I will happily sit down with and give my all to. So when you're approaching some of these giants in our industry, if you see Matt King and you go and you talk to him, ask him a smart question. Don't ask him how you get your own show in Las Vegas, because that's not a good question. ask him something that will actually lead you towards gaining real knowledge. A reasonable question to ask to make yourself better, not something that is related to fame or money or anything like, or all of the things that people chase that don't actually lead to happiness. If you love magic, ask questions that will help make you a better magician, because that's what will actually make you happier, and that's what the people at the convention like Danny D'Ortiz will be excited to talk to you about.
So there you go, kids. Feel free to prepare your questions for Ben about whether he prefers red cards or blue cards and ask him at the session this January. Ben, thank you so much for taking up so much of your time talking to us today. I really, really appreciate it. And I very much look forward to meeting you in January.
It was my pleasure. Great talking to you. Wait, should I have hit record at the beginning of this?